I am washing the feet of this renunciate, and then I shall clean his cooking utensils. Babaji smiled at me like a little child. I knew he was intimating that he wanted me to criticize no one, but to see the Lord as residing equally in all body. Chapter 35. The Christ-like life of Lahiri Mahasaya. From a reverent study of the Bible from an Oriental viewpoint, and from intuitional perception, I am convinced that John the Baptist was, in past lives, the guru of Christ. There are numerous passages in the Bible which infer that John and Jesus in their last incarnations were, respectively, Elijah and his disciple Elisha. These are the spellings in the Old Testament. The Greek translators spell the names as Elias and Elisius. They reappear in the New Testament in these changed forms. The very end of the Old Testament is a prediction of the reincarnation of Elijah and Elisha. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. Thus John, Elijah, sent before the coming of the Lord, was born slightly earlier to serve as a herald for Christ. An angel appeared to Zacharias the father to testify that his coming son John would be no other than Elijah, Elias. The eternal bond of guru and disciple that existed between John and Jesus was present also for Babaji and Lahiri Mahasaya. With tender solicitude the deathless guru swam the Lethean waters that swirled between the last two lives of his keela, and guided the successive steps taken by the child and then by the man Lahiri Mahasaya. It was not until the disciple had reached his 33rd year that Babaji deemed the time to be ripe to openly re-establish the never-severed link. Then, after their brief meeting near Aniket, the selfless master banished his dearly beloved disciple from the little mountain group, releasing him for an outward world mission. My son, I shall come whenever you need me. What mortal lover can bestow that infinite promise? Unknown to society in general, a great spiritual renaissance began to flow from a remote corner of Benares. Just as the fragrance of flowers cannot be suppressed, so Lahiri Mahasaya, quietly living as an ideal householder, could not hide his innate glory. Slowly, from every part of India, the devotee bees sought the divine nectar of the liberated master. The English office superintendent was one of the first to notice a strange transcendental change in his employee, whom he endearingly called Ecstatic Babu. Sir, you seem sad. What is the trouble? Lahiri Mahasaya made this sympathetic inquiry one morning to his employer. My wife in England is critically ill. I am torn by anxiety. I shall get you some word about her. Lahiri Mahasaya left the room and sat for a short time in a secluded spot. On his return he smiled consolingly. Your wife is improving, she is now writing you a letter. The omniscient yogi quoted some parts of the missive. Ecstatic Babu, I already know that you are no ordinary man. Yet I am unable to believe that, at will, you can banish time and space. The promised letter finally arrived. The astounded superintendent found that it contained not only the good news of his wife's recovery, but also the same phrases which, weeks earlier, Lahiri Mahasaya had repeated. The wife came to India some months later. She visited the office, where Lahiri Mahasaya was quietly sitting at his desk. The woman approached him reverently. Sir, she said, it was your form, hallowed in glorious light, that I beheld months ago by my sick bed in London. At that moment I was completely healed. Soon after, I was able to undertake the long ocean voyage to India. Day after day, one or two devotees besought the sublime guru for cryo-initiation. In addition to these spiritual duties, and to those of his business and family life, the great master took an enthusiastic interest in education. He organized many study groups, and played an active part in the growth of a large high school in the Bengalatola section of Benares. His regular discourses on the scriptures came to be called his Gita assembly, eagerly attended by many truth seekers. By these manifold activities, Lahiri Mahasaya sought to answer the common challenge: after performing one's business and social duties, where is the time for devotional meditation? The harmoniously balanced life of the great householder guru became the silent inspiration of thousands of questioning hearts. earning only a modest salary, thrifty, unostentatious, accessible to all. The master carried on naturally and happily in the path of worldly life. Though ensconced in the seat of the Supreme One, Lahiri Mahasaya showed reverence to all men, irrespective of their differing merits. When his devotees saluted him, he bowed in turn to them. With a childlike humility, the master often touched the feet of others, but seldom allowed them to pay him similar honor, even though such obeisance toward the guru is an ancient oriental custom. A significant feature of Lahiri Mahasaya's life was his gift of cryo-initiation to those of every faith. Not Hindus only, but Muslims and Christians were among his foremost disciples. Monists and dualists, those of all faiths or of no established faith, were impartially received and instructed by the universal guru. One of his highly advanced chelas was Abdul Ghaffar Khan, a Mohammedan. It shows great courage on the part of Lahiri Mahasaya that, although a high caste Brahmin, he tried his utmost to dissolve the rigid caste bigotry of his time. Those from every walk of life found shelter under the master's omnipresent wings. Like all God-inspired prophets, Lahiri Mahasaya gave new hope to the outcasts and downtrodden of society. Always remember that you belong to no one, and no one belongs to you. Reflect that someday you will suddenly have to leave everything in this world, so make the acquaintanceship of God now, the great guru told his disciples. Prepare yourself for the coming astral journey of death by daily riding in the balloon of God perception. Through delusion you are perceiving yourself as a bundle of flesh and bones, which at best is a nest of troubles. Meditate unceasingly, that you may quickly behold yourself as the infinite essence, free from every form of misery. Cease being a prisoner of the body. Using the secret key of Kriya, learn to escape into spirit. The great guru encouraged his various students to adhere to the good traditional discipline of their own faith. Stressing the all-inclusive nature of Kriya as a practical technique of liberation, Lahiri Mahasaya then gave his chelas liberty to express their lives in conformance with environment and upbringing. A Muslim should perform his Namajay worship 4 times daily, the master pointed out. 4 times daily a Hindu should sit in meditation. A Christian should go down on his knees 4 times daily, praying to God and then reading the Bible. With wise discernment the guru guided his followers into the paths of bhakti, devotion, karma, action, jnana wisdom, or raja, royal or complete, yogas, according to each man's natural tendencies. The master, who was slow to give his permission to devotees wishing to enter the formal path of monkhood, always cautioned them to first reflect well on the austerities of the monastic life. The great guru taught his disciples to avoid theoretical discussion of the scriptures. He only is wise who devotes himself to realizing, not reading only, the ancient revelations, he said. Solve all your problems through meditation. Exchange unprofitable religious speculations for actual God contact. Clear your mind of dogmatic theological debris, let in the fresh, healing waters of direct perception. Attune yourself to the active inner guidance, the divine voice has the answer to every dilemma of life. Though man's ingenuity for getting himself into trouble appears to be endless, the infinite succor is no less resourceful. The master's omnipresence was demonstrated one day before a group of disciples who were listening to his exposition of the Bhagavad Gita. As he was explaining the meaning of Kitastha Chaitanya or the Christ consciousness in all vibratory creation, Lahiri Mahasaya suddenly gasped and cried out, "I am drowning in the bodies of many souls off the coast of Japan." The next morning the chelas read a newspaper account of the death of many people whose ship had foundered the preceding day near Japan. The distant disciples of Lahiri Mahasaya were often made aware of his enfolding presence. "I am ever with those who practice Kriya," he said consolingly to chelas who could not remain near him. "I will guide you to the cosmic home through your enlarging perceptions." Swami Satyananda was told by a devotee that, unable to go to Benares, the man had nevertheless received precise Kriya initiation in a dream. Lahiri Mahasaya had appeared to instruct the chela in answer to his prayers. If a disciple neglected any of his worldly obligations, The master would gently correct and discipline him. Lahiri Mahasaya's words were mild and healing, even when he was forced to speak openly of Akila's faults, Sri Yukteswar once told me. He added ruefully, "No disciple ever fled from our master's barbs." I could not help laughing. But I truthfully assured Sri Yukteswar that, sharp or not, his every word was music to my ears. Lahiri Mahasaya carefully graded Kriya into 4 progressive initiations. He bestowed the 3 higher techniques only after the devotee had manifested definite spiritual progress. One day a certain Kila, convinced that his worth was not being duly evaluated, gave voice to his discontent. "Master," he said, "surely I am ready now for the 2nd initiation." At this moment the door opened to admit a humble disciple, Brinda Bhagat. He was a Benares postman. "Brinda, sit by me here." The great guru smiled at him affectionately. "Tell me, are you ready for the 2nd technique of Kriya?" The little postman folded his hands in supplication. "Gurudeva," he said in alarm, "no more initiations. Please. How can I assimilate any higher teachings? I have come today to ask your blessings, because the 1st divine Kriya has filled me with such intoxication that I cannot deliver my letters. Already Brinda swims in the sea of spirit." At these words from Lahiri Mahasaya, his other disciple hung his head. "Master," he said, "I see I have been a poor workman, finding fault with my tools." The postman, who was an uneducated man, later developed his insight through Kriya to such an extent that scholars occasionally sought his interpretation on involved scriptural points. Innocent alike of sin and syntax, little Brinda won renown in the domain of learned pundits. Besides the numerous Benares disciples of Lahiri Mahasaya, hundreds came to him from distant parts of India. He himself travelled to Bengal on several occasions, visiting at the homes of the fathers-in-law of his 2 sons. Thus blessed by his presence, Bengal became honeycombed with small Kriya groups. Particularly in the districts of Krishnagar and Bishanupa, many silent devotees to this day have kept the invisible current of spiritual meditation flowing. Among many saints who received Kriya from Lahiri Mahasaya may be mentioned the illustrious Swami Vaskarananda Saraswati of Benares, and the Digaha ascetic of high stature, Balananda Brahmachari. For a time Lahiri Mahasaya served as private tutor to the son of Maharaja Iswari Narayan Sain of Ahada of Benares. Recognizing the master's spiritual attainment, the Maharaja, as well as his son, sought Kriya initiation, as did the Maharaja Jyotindra Mohan Thacker. A number of Lahiri Mahasaya's disciples with influential worldly position were desirous of expanding the Kriya circle by publicity. The guru refused his permission. One Kila, the royal physician to the Lord of Benares, started an organized effort to spread the master's name as Keshi Baba, exalted one of Benares. Again the guru forbade it. "Let the fragrance of the Kriya flower be wafted naturally, without any display," he said. "Its seeds will take root in the soil of spiritually fertile hearts." Although the great master did not adopt the system of preaching through the modern medium of an organization, or through the printing press, he knew that the power of his message would rise like a resistless flood, inundating by its own force the banks of human minds. The changed and purified lives of devotees were the simple guarantees of the deathless vitality of Kriya. In 1886, 25 years after his Raniket initiation, Lahiri Mahasaya was retired on a pension. With his availability in the daytime, disciples sought him out in ever-increasing numbers. The great guru now sat in silence most of the time, locked in the tranquil lotus posture. He seldom left his little parlor, even for a walk or to visit other parts of the house. A quiet stream of chelas arrived, almost ceaselessly, for a darshan, holy sight, of the guru. To the awe of all beholders, Lahiri Mahasaya's habitual physiological state exhibited the superhuman features of breathlessness, sleeplessness, cessation of pulse and heartbeat, calm eyes unblinking for hours, and a profound aura of peace. No visitors departed without upliftment of spirit. All knew they had received the silent blessing of a true man of God. The master now permitted his disciple, Panchanan Bhattacharya, to open an area mission institution in Calcutta. Here the saintly disciple spread the message of Kriya Yoga, and prepared for public benefit certain yogic herbal medicines. In accordance with ancient custom, the master gave to people in general anime oil for the cure of various diseases. When the guru requested a disciple to distill the oil, he could easily accomplish the task. If anyone else tried, he would encounter strange difficulties, finding that the medicine oil had almost evaporated after going through the required distilling processes. Evidently the master's blessing was a necessary ingredient. Lahiri Mahasaya's handwriting and signature, in Bengali script, are shown above. The lines occur in a letter to Akila. The great master interprets a Sanskrit verse as follows: "He who has attained a state of calmness wherein his eyelids do not blink, has achieved Sambhavi Mudra." Signed, Sri Shyamacharan Divasharman. The area mission institution undertook the publication of many of the Guru's scriptural commentaries. Like Jesus and other great prophets, Lahiri Mahasaya himself wrote no books, but his penetrating interpretations were recorded and arranged by various disciples. Some of these voluntary amanuenses were more discerning than others in correctly conveying the profound insight of the Guru, yet, on the whole, their efforts were successful. Through their zeal, the world possesses unparalleled commentaries by Lahiri Mahasaya on 26 ancient scriptures. Sri Ananda Mohan Lahiri, a grandson of the master, has written an interesting booklet on Kriya. The text of the Bhagavad Gita is a part of the great epic, the Mahabharata, which possesses several knot points, via skitas, Sri Ananda wrote. "Keep those knot points unquestioned, and we find nothing but mythical stories of a peculiar and easily misunderstood type. Keep those knot points unexplained, and we have lost a science which the East has preserved with superhuman patience after a quest of thousands of years of experiment." It was the commentaries of Lahiri Mahasaya which brought to light, clear of allegories, the very science of religion that had been so cleverly put out of sight in the riddle of scriptural letters and imagery. No longer a mere, unintelligible jugglery of words, the otherwise unmeaning formulas of Vedic worship have been proved by the master to be full of scientific significance. We know that man is usually helpless against the insurgent sway of evil passions, but these are rendered powerless and man finds no motive in their indulgence when the dawns on him a consciousness of superior and lasting bliss through Kriya. Here the give up, the negation of the lower passions, synchronizes with a take up, the assertion of a beatitude. Without such a course, hundreds of moral maxims which run in mere negatives are useless to us. Our eagerness for worldly activity kills in us the sense of spiritual awe. We cannot comprehend the great life behind all names and forms. Just because science brings home to us how we can use the powers of nature, this familiarity has bred a contempt for her ultimate secrets. Our relation with nature is one of practical business. We tease her, so to speak, to know how she can be used to serve our purposes. We make use of her energies, whose source yet remains unknown. In science, our relation with nature is one that exists between a man and his servant, or in a philosophical sense she is like a captive in the witness box. We cross-examine her, challenge her, and minutely weigh her evidence in human scales which cannot measure her hidden values. On the other hand, when the self is in communion with a higher power, nature automatically obeys, without stress or strain, the will of man. This effortless command over nature is called miraculous by the uncomprehending materialist. The life of Lahiri Mahasaya set an example which changed the erroneous notion that yoga is a mysterious practice. Every man may find a way through Kriya to understand his proper relation with nature, and to feel spiritual reverence for all phenomena, whether mystical or of everyday occurrence, in spite of the matter-of-factness of physical science. We must bear in mind that what was mystical a thousand years ago is no longer so, and what is mysterious now may become lawfully intelligible 100 years hence. It is the infinite, the ocean of power, that is at the back of all manifestations. The law of Kriya Yoga is eternal. It is true like mathematics, Like the simple rules of addition and subtraction, the law of Kriya can never be destroyed. Burn to ashes all the books on mathematics, the logically minded will always rediscover such truths. Destroy all the sacred books on yoga, its fundamental laws will come out whenever there appears a true yogi who comprises within himself pure devotion and consequently pure knowledge. Just as Babaji is among the greatest of avatars, a Mahavatar, and Sri Yukteswarajna Navatar or incarnation of wisdom, so Lahiri Mahasaya may justly be called Yogavatar, or incarnation of yoga. By the standards of both qualitative and quantitative good, he elevated the spiritual level of society. In his power to raise his close disciples to Christ-like stature and in his wide dissemination of truth among the masses, Lahiri Mahasaya ranks among the saviors of mankind. His uniqueness as a prophet lies in his practical stress on a definite method, Kriya, opening for the first time the doors of yoga or freedom to all men. Apart from the miracles of his own life, surely the Yogavatar reached the zenith of all wonders in reducing the ancient complexities of yoga to an effective simplicity not beyond the ordinary grasp. In reference to miracles, Lahiri Mahasaya often said, "The operation of subtle laws which are unknown to people in general should not be publicly discussed or published without due discrimination." If in these pages I have appeared to flout his cautionary words, it is because he has given me an inward reassurance. Also, in recording the lives of Babaji, Lahiri Mahasaya, and Sri Yukteswar, I have thought it advisable to omit many true miraculous stories, which could hardly have been included without writing, also, an explanatory volume of abstruse philosophy. New Hope for New Men. Divine Union. The Yogavatar proclaimed, is possible through self-effort, and is not dependent on theological beliefs or on the arbitrary will of a cosmic dictator. Through use of the Kriya key, persons who cannot bring themselves to believe in the divinity of any man will behold at last the full divinity of their own selves. Chapter 36. Babaji's interest in the West. Master, did you ever meet Babaji? MIT was a calm summer night in Serampore. The large stars of the tropics gleamed over our heads as I sat by Sri Yukteswar's side on the second-story balcony of the Hermitage. Yes, Master smiled at my direct question. His eyes lit with reverence. 3 times I have been blessed by the sight of the Deathless Guru. Our first meeting was in Allahabad at Kumbh Mela. The religious fairs held in India since time immemorial are known as Kumbh Melas. They have kept spiritual goals in constant sight of the multitude. Devout Hindus gather by the millions every 6 years to meet thousands of sadhus, yogis, swamis, and ascetics of all kinds. Many are hermits who never leave their secluded haunts except to attend the melas and bestow their blessings on worldly men and women. I was not a swami at the time I met Babaji, Sri Yukteswar went on. But I had already received Kriya initiation from Lahiri Mahasaya. He encouraged me to attend the Mela which was convening in January, 1894 at Allahabad. It was my first experience of a Kumbh, I felt slightly dazed by the clamor and surge of the crowd. In my searching gazes around I saw no illumined face of a master. Passing a bridge on the bank of the Ganges, I noticed an acquaintance standing nearby, his begging bowl extended. Oh, this fair is nothing but a chaos of noise and beggars, I thought in disillusionment. I wonder if Western scientists, patiently enlarging the realms of knowledge for the practical good of mankind, are not more pleasing to God than these idlers who profess religion but concentrate on alms. My smoldering reflections on social reform were interrupted by the voice of a tall sannyasi who halted before me. Sir, he said, a saint is calling you. Who is he? Come and see for yourself. Hesitantly following this laconic advice, I soon found myself near a tree whose branches were sheltering a guru with an attractive group of disciples. The master, a bright unusual figure, with sparkling dark eyes, rose at my approach and embraced me. Welcome, Swamiji, he said affectionately. Sir, I replied emphatically, I am not a Swami. Those on whom I am divinely directed to bestow the title of Swami never cast it off. The saint addressed me simply, but deep conviction of truth rang in his words. I was engulfed in an instant wave of spiritual blessing. Smiling at my sudden elevation into the ancient monastic order, I bowed at the feet of the obviously great and angelic being in human form who had thus honored me. Babaji, for it was indeed he, motioned me to a seat near him under the tree. He was strong and young, and looked like Lahiri Mahasaya, yet the resemblance did not strike me, even though I had often heard of the extraordinary similarities in the appearance of the two masters. Babaji possesses a power by which he can prevent any specific thought from arising in a person's mind. Evidently the great guru wished me to be perfectly natural in his presence, not overawed by knowledge of his identity. What do you think of the Kumamela? I was greatly disappointed, sir, I added hastily, up until the time I met you. Somehow saints and this commotion don't seem to belong together. Child, the master said, though apparently I was nearly twice his own age, for the faults of the many, judge not the whole. Everything on earth is of mixed character, like a mingling of sand and sugar. Be like the wise ant which seizes only the sugar, and leaves the sand untouched. Though many sadhus here still wander in delusion, yet the Melu is blessed by a few men of God realization. In view of my own meeting with this exalted master, I quickly agreed with his observation. Sir, I commented, I have been thinking of the scientific men of the West, greater by far in intelligence than most people congregated here, living in distant Europe and America, professing different creeds, and ignorant of the real values of such melas as the present one. They are the men who could benefit greatly by meetings with India's masters. But, although high in intellectual attainments, many Westerners are wedded to rank materialism. Others, famous in science and philosophy, do not recognize the essential unity in religion. Their creeds serve as insurmountable barriers that threaten to separate them from us forever. I saw that you are interested in the West, as well as the East. Babaji's face beamed with approval. I felt the pangs of your heart. Broad enough for all men, whether Oriental or Occidental. That is why I summoned you here. East and West must establish a golden middle path of activity and spirituality combined, he continued. India has much to learn from the West in material development. In return, India can teach the universal methods by which the West will be able to base its religious beliefs on the unshakable foundations of yogic science. You, Swamiji, have a part to play in the coming harmonious exchange between Orient and Occident. Some years hence I shall send you a disciple whom you can train for yoga dissemination in the West. The vibrations there of many spiritually seeking souls come floodlike to me. I perceive potential saints in America and Europe, waiting to be awakened. At this point in his story, Sri Yukteswar turned his gaze fully on mine. My son, he said, smiling in the moonlight, you are the disciple that, years ago, Babaji promised to send me. I was happy to learn that Babaji had directed my steps to Sri Yukteswar, yet it was hard for me to visualize myself in the remote West, away from my beloved guru and the simple hermitage peace. Babaji then spoke of the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Yukteswar went on. To my astonishment, he indicated by a few words of praise that he was aware of the fact that I had written interpretations on various Gita chapters. At my request, Swamiji, please undertake another task, the great master said. Will you not write a short book on the underlying basic unity between the Christian and Hindu scriptures? Show by parallel references that the inspired sons of God have spoken the same truths, now obscured by men's sectarian differences. Maharaj, I answered diffidently, what a command. Shall I be able to fulfill it? Babaji laughed softly. My son, why do you doubt? He said reassuringly. Indeed, whose work is all this, and who is the doer of all actions? Whatever the Lord has made me say is bound to materialize as truth. I deemed myself empowered by the blessings of the saint, and agreed to write the book. Feeling reluctantly that the parting hour had arrived, I rose from my leafy seat. Do you know Lahiri? The master inquired. He is a great soul, isn't he? Tell him of our meeting. He then gave me a message for Lahiri Mahasaya. After I had bowed humbly in farewell, The saint smiled benignly. "When your book is finished, I shall pay you a visit," he promised. "Goodbye for the present." I left Allahabad the following day and entrained for Benares.